The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
I've been representing all my life. I'm getting ready to make it count this time. Since it's 2021 for your family line, you better get ready. It's about that time. So tell mama to be ready. Tell it to the whole family. The one, the two, four, two. The count depends on you. So tell Ted to go tell below. Mark it down on your calendar. Since it's 2021, this one's for everyone.
This morning, and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. Today is Monday, the 30th of August, 2021, and you are On the Clock with Erin Green. On the Clock, we engage organizations, institutions, social and cultural leaders, and ordinary people to better understand the impact of public policy, private sector development, and emerging social and consumer trends. On the Clock, we have conversations that help us understand and navigate a rapidly changing Bahamas. Today's show is brought to you by the Department of Inland Revenue. And as we get into the show, I have a brief message about the Real Property Tax Forgiveness Program. Save on your real property tax. Bahamian property owners can now take advantage of waivers on their real property tax in one of two ways. One, bring your account to zero. Two, get a payment plan. This offer ends August 31st, 2021. That is tomorrow. For further information, email rptforgive@bahamas.gov.bs or call 242-225-5778. And that's a toll-free number. This message is brought to you by the Department of Inland Revenue. What a busy weekend we have had since nomination day. There are many highlights, including, I see it looks like the Minister of Health has dropped the hottest rap album ever seen in the history of the world, featuring Elmo. I mean, I cannot wait to hear that. And I wonder what it is called. I wonder what some of the tracks on it are. One of the tracks got to be LOI Believe I'm a Winner. That got to be the hottest track on that album. A good morning, good morning. I want to say good morning to the Ministry of Works. And I want to point out to them that the Milo Butler northbound lane verge, so that's the off the roadside, not the middle of the two lanes, but the verge is the bush, right? The off the roadside, that the verge is currently growing into the road. Milo Butler Highway northbound lane needs immediate attention. And this has been brought to my attention over the weekend by a number of drivers. I want to say good morning to Vanessa Smith, who uses that road regularly, and I want her to be safe on that road. Thank you for bringing that to my attention. I also want to just make a quick note before we get into the show. This morning, while I was waking, I passed through Mackey Street and Shirley Street intersection twice in approximately 30 minutes. And do you know that an accident occurred within that 30 minutes between the time that I was there before? An accident occurred in that short amount of time. Now, I'd like to say that I'm almost certain why that accident occurred. I want to say I'm almost certain that it's probably because somebody decided to turn left on red without stopping at the intersection to assess whether it was safe to proceed through the intersection on the red light. This happens often at that intersection. It happens so often that I would set up a whole treasury cash collection station right there. In fact, I would incentivize the police to do it by ensuring that 75% of the funds collected at that spot diverted directly to police funds. But that's just me. Anyway, lots of things happened over the weekend, and unfortunately, today we're not going to get to delve into them. Now, it's not to say that these things that were happening weren't important. It's not that at all, you know. It's just that, you know, sometimes we can't just let the politicians create the conversation and control the conversation and critique the conversation themselves. Sometimes we got to change the narrative. So, like I said, what I aim to do, and now we only have like 17 days left, 2.5 weeks before the election, is to have types of conversations about our politics to, I hope, prepare us for participation in both politics and governance. So I see some of the things. If some of these people can run the country as well as they do their own finances, we'd all be in safer hands. I see all of those headlines. We're going to get to them throughout this week. So before I start the show, I just have one quick note before I bring in my guests. And I want to say condolences to the families of all members of our wider community that died this weekend. In particular, the two divers that died on Saturday during a fishing trip. Those divers were a member of what I'm going to call now the Montague Ramp community. I want to send out a condolences to their families, their loved ones, the men that died, and also to the wider Montague Ramp community that was also deeply affected by this loss. This whole pandemic, this is an opportunity for us to reassess ourselves and our commitment to humanity and our commitment to each other. And to ensure, we must all commit to ensure that we can all live and die in and with dignity. And that is a part of the work that we have to do on this planet. Anyway, I got an exciting day. I think it's time to bring in my guest. I have this morning a representative from the Progressive Liberal Party, Dr. Linwood Brown, on this morning. Good morning, Dr. Brown.
Good morning, Ms. Green. How are you doing?
I am good, thank you. How are you? Good, good. And so, welcome to the show. You are now on the clock.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
Let's go.
So, it's been a busy weekend.
It has.
And I'm going to be honest with you guys. Well, I say you guys, with the general audience, I'm not really concerned about the candidate launch or rally because parties have ratified candidates weeks ago, and they've all had more than enough time to introduce themselves to the Bahamian public. What I was, and I'm still looking forward to, is an idea launch, a policy launch, a strategy launch. And what would have impressed me is an attempt to canvass the Bahamian public on key issues and an opportunity for politicians to inform their agendas and mandates with the wishes of the people. But maybe even this circumstance is a strategy in and of itself. So I am prepared. I want to ask you a couple of questions, but I also would like to give you an opportunity to launch your party's ideas, strategies, and policies that you intend to bring into the 2021-2026 administration.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Aaron, for the opportunity.
Absolutely.
The Progressive Liberal Party, we have a we call it economic empowerment plan that is going to be launched. We have launched it already, but it's going to come in the formal launch this evening by our leader, Mr. Philip Brave Davis. Regarding the other current events going on in the Bahamas, like COVID, we have a COVID plan that the Progressive Liberal Party have we presented to the government in the past, but is being neglected and not looked at. And in fact, it was said that he doesn't listen to Brave. So our economic empowerment plan is from A to Z. We can cover on all bases. And I don't want to preempt the leader of the opposition by going into depth with it at this point in time, because he's going to be the one delivering it thus him and Mr. Justin Cooper, our deputy leader. But I would like to speak about the COVID plans and how the COVID is being managed in the Bahamas, if you allow me a moment.
Absolutely. Just one quick question. Will viewers be able to access a plan or a document to read over as they're listening to the leader of the opposition speak tonight?
Absolutely. We plan to make it available just before the leader of the opposition speaks, so the BMA can follow and do the check boxes to see which part of the plan best ascribes to their needs and their wants and the direction they want to see the Bahamas go into. And we're also open to further suggestion from the public and different sectors of the public as to how we want to see the Bahamas grow in the future.
Absolutely. So let's focus on the COVID plan now.
Well, as we stated from the initial onset of COVID, we advocate for testing. Why is testing so important? I remember when I was a very young doctor coming home, I came home in the midst of an HIV epidemic. And the mantra then was early detection leads to prevention. Mm-hmm. So that hasn't changed with epidemiology. It hasn't changed with epidemics and pandemics. The issue of testing and free testing, it is important because if I can readily test, I can now determine if I am COVID positive and then do the responsible thing and isolate and quarantine early. The cost for COVID tests is prohibitive to most people in the Bahamas, the many people in the Bahamas. So imagine a four who have to do a COVID test because one of their members have a symptom and that test costs, a PCR test costs $134. Mm-hmm. And a family of four can't afford 134 times four. So the other three who haven't tested, they are going about their business and not taking the necessary precaution by quarantining and isolating while they are spreading. Until they themselves come down with symptoms, now you have been in four different places, three different restaurants, two banks, BEC, BPL, Kilbama, all to pay your bills and to do your normal necessities of life, Super Value, et cetera. And you're coming in contact with countless amount of behemoths and put countless amount of behemoths at risk. This is why we advocate for free testing, ramp up testing. I notice our billboards, we have our, when we have our COVID numbers, but it does not say our testing positivity rate, which is an important index to understand how we are fighting and how we are doing against this pandemic. Globally, what's accepted a positivity rate less than 5% is considered flattening the curve. But we don't know our positivity rate. What a positivity rate is, total amount of positive tests divided by the total tests done times 100. And if you look at Jamaica billboard, in the public sector, they are 50.7%. In the private sector, they are 8.8%, which indicates that Jamaica have widespread community of COVID outbreaks. Also indicates that they are under testing. The Bahamas, we haven't done that. We are not arming ourselves with the tools necessary to properly fight back this pandemic. And this is disheartening. We've had policy positions by the prime minister, the competent authority, which led to increased hospitalization and increased deaths. For instance, July of 2020, there was a no-test 72-hour process policy where persons who went and stayed for less than 72 hours could return to Bahamas without any testing. That was absurd.
Absolutely.
And then we saw the largest uptick in the COVID numbers that year for that time in October, which is a direct reflection of the no-test policy. Again, in 2021, July, the same thing. vaccinated persons, he said, don't have the test to come to the Bahamas. But what we do, vaccinated persons can't catch COVID and can't transmit COVID. So what now, August, we're seeing the largest amount of COVID numbers to date, and all because of poor policy positions. So we are seeing, this is why testing was the mantra of the PLP. We understand epidemiology. We understand how the early detection leads to better prevention. But the Prime Minister seems not want to do free testing. And because of that, I get what he was trying to do when he said there is no need for vaccinated persons to do a test to come there. I get what he's trying to do. He was trying to fill our hotels with tourists. Fine, he did that. But what he also did, he filled our hospital with patients and filled our morgue with bodies. And that's a direct correlation to his no testing policy. He has that on his hands. There's no doubt about it. So I find it hard pressed, Aaron,
yes,
to believe that this advice was given for medical personnel. I find it hard pressed that somebody in the Ministry of Health said to him, listen, vaccinated persons do need to take the test to come to the Bahamas. I refuse to believe that. I refuse my medical colleagues to be that reckless. I think that was an economic policy implemented by persons who are whispering the Prime Minister's head about economics. So in this case, he put money over people's lives.
Right. So I will argue that perhaps at the end of the day, it was an attempt to ensure that they could afford the resources needed in the healthcare sector by ensuring that the tourism sector stayed as open as possible. So here's a question to your PLP. How will we then pay for this testing? Also,
great
considering
question.
The fact that I think the CDC has determined that they will stop the use of the RT-PCR tests in December, what testing option would the PLP employ, and how will we pay for it?
Well, we still have the rapid antigen test.
Okay.
When compared with the PCR test, has a 96%, some tests have a 96% positivity rate, which means about 4% false negative rate, which is acceptable based on statistics. How would the PLP pay for it? We have a national health insurance plan. We have not used that at all.
Okay.
You can go to your doctor now and do an annual checkup at no cost to you. Men can do a prostate test. Women can do their breast exams, pap smears at no cost to them via the national health insurance plan. Why we don't use these resources we already have established? This is how we pay for this. If you buy rapid antigen tests in bulk, you may pay at first cost $4 or $5. What is $4 or $5 to human life?
Absolutely.
It's minuscule. It's absolutely nothing compared to human life. I'm not saying that there's some value you could put on human life, but there isn't. But that's all it costs. So we have this national health insurance. We have doctors who are part of national health insurance plan. We have various community clinics. We can use the resources you already have. Drop your bucket here.
Now,
instead of waiting until you get somewhere else.
Now,
this is why we are so adamant about free testing. We know it can be done.
So we know that it's possible with the right strategies and the right financing. We've only got a few moments of time. Can I ask you a question, or do you want to close out with some last words?
You could ask me a question.
All right. So any COVID-related strategy is going to require buy-in from the public at large, and it's going to require a commitment to self-discipline and community discipline. So the question is, how will you and your government and or your party and or your constituency team cause or compel Bahamians to discipline themselves and cause others to do the same? And in this instance, I'm thinking, adhere to a testing protocol. If you know you've been exposed, please come in and get tested. The testing is free. How will you compel Bahamians to discipline themselves to participate in this type of strategy?
Good question. Well, I don't think, unlike most people, I think the Bahamas, we're quite disciplined. We can be quite disciplined if we want to. With a correct PR program, appealing to people's better sides, that knowing that, hey, did happen to you, get tested, get vaccinated. Because there's a program I would like to do, vaccinate or ventilate. Those are your choices. Those are your potential choices on the table. If you don't vaccinate, you'd probably be ventilated. You could choose either one. At least when you vaccinate, you can choose the vaccine. When you ventilate, you cannot choose to ventilate. Now, adherence to the policy will come down to marketing strategy, giving beaming people the raw truth, letting them know the benefits of it, letting them know what it's doing to the economy. I think the government didn't do a good enough job on letting the Bahamian people know the economic ramifications, the health ramifications, the social ramifications of not being disciplined in this COVID strategy. I think with the proper PR, using persons who are skilled in this area, instead of using the technocrats we may have the import, we may have to bring Bahamians back home, who are experts in this area of marketing and healthcare marketing, and use those tools to make Bahamian people understand, listen, we with you, we get you, we understand you want to go about move freely. Help us to get you there more sooner. Help us to get you there so you can strive economically, so you can have the social activities that you need. But this is what we require of you to accomplish this. Let's work together to accomplish this. The Good Samaritan speech the Prime Minister gave, I don't think it was enough, and I thought that his time, he wasn't a good messenger for that speech because his actions didn't demonstrate good Samaritanship in the past. So we need to do a better job of appealing to the better conscience of the Bahamian people. And I think with strategy planning and healthcare marketing professional, we can accomplish that.
Absolutely. Wow, I think we are almost out of time. I have one quick text for you. And that text says, please ask the doctor, does the PLP support vaccinations? And if yes, why is it that they don't do more to encourage Bahamians to get vaccinated?
I believe that is a self-answering question, because our leader is fully vaccinated. Our deputy leader is fully vaccinated. Our chairman is fully vaccinated. Our chairman, every morning when he gives his address, he says, go vaccinate. We are doing what we can do. Our leader publicly made his vaccination when he got vaccinated. He made it public knowledge to people. So your action speaks louder than your words in many cases. I think his actions of getting vaccinated, despite him having COVID, he still got vaccinated. Our deputy leader got vaccinated, made it a very public thing. Our chairman got vaccinated, made it a very public thing. So we do support vaccination in part. That's a part of our COVID strategy management when we become the government come September 16th. So
absolutely.
We are advocates of vaccination. We want the Bahamian people to use their choice and let that choice be to choose vaccination. And our actions speaks louder than our words.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Dr. Brown. As we close out the show, can you let the audience know where they can find the economic plan once it's launched this evening, and how they can get in touch with the organization if they want to find out who their candidate is, what the number for their constituency office or the candidate's office is in their constituency?
I think all this information is on the PLP's web page. I think it's plp.org. I'm not 100% certain. I can phone you back with the correct web address. But it's plp.org. And that plan, the plan will be there. The constituency office will be the headquarters. The headquarters office will be there on how to contact each candidate. And I welcome the Bahamas to visit our page and see if our presentation suits your needs.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Dr. Brown. And thank you to the PLP for sharing with us this morning some of their ideas, strategies, and policies for the next administration. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you. Good morning, Bahamas, again.
Absolutely. Thank you to my audience. I think this is a very interesting conversation. I really wish we had more time to delve into some more questions, but I think that was a good start at it. I particularly appreciate a politician who is not afraid to answer questions. And so once again, thank you, Dr. Brown, for such an engaging conversation this morning. You can hear my music. That means it's time to go to a break. And when we come back from the break, I'm bringing in a fellow media personality from Barbados. And let's take a look at Bahamian politics from the outside. We'll be right back on 96.9 FM Guardian Radio, so stay tuned.
Throughout our lifetime, we must all make decisions. No matter how we choose, the right one just needs to be made. Like having J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents and Brokers as your insurance partner. We've been serving the Bahamas for over 100 years. Whether you need home, motor, marine, or commercial insurance, make the right decision. Call 397-2100 or visit jsjohnson.com.
J.S. Johnson Insurance.
I've been representing all my life. I'm getting ready to make it count this time. Since it's 2021 for your family line, you better get ready. It's about that time. So tell mama to be ready. Tell it to the whole family. The round the 242. The count depends on you. So tell Teddy, go tell below. Knock it down on your calendar. Since it's 2021, this one's for everyone.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Good morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. You are on the clock with Erin Green on this Monday, the 30th of August, 2021. And if you haven't noticed, election season is in full gear. In fact, I don't know where the time went so quickly. But here we are, 17 days away from the next general election. And this morning, I have invited a radio colleague and an advocacy colleague, Mr. Peter W. Wickham from Barbados, on the show this morning to talk a bit of politics. I want to get a sense of what our politics look like from the outside. And Mr. Wickham is an experienced political analyst and consultant. And I think we could do well with getting a sense of what our neighbors think about what's going on the ground in the Bahamas. Good morning, Mr. Wickham.
Good to be with you, Erin. It's been my first time on Bahamas radio, so it's an interesting morning for me.
Absolutely, yes, yes. This show is a bit quick and lively and short on time, so I'm going to get right to it. I'm going to do a brief intro, if you don't mind. Peter Wickham is a political consultant and a principal director of the leading Caribbean political research company, Caribbean Development Research Services. This organization conducts political polls and research and has worked with several major political parties and governments throughout the Caribbean. Mr. Wickham was also a lecturer in political science and research methods at UWE, Cave Hills Department of Government. He also writes a column each Sunday in The Nation, a Barbados publication, and also hosts a weekly radio show called Down to Brass Tacks. How you doing?
Good. Yeah, well, that pretty much sums it up.
Yes, sir.
Doing well, yes.
Good, good. So, for me, this is a bit of a whirlwind. I have never really experienced a snap election, and what we call election season, what we call silly season here, has never been so silly, and I guess that's with the shortened time given to us. Have we seen any snap elections recently, especially during the pandemic, like in the last 5 to 10 years? Have we seen snap elections in the region?
Yeah, I mean, Erin, I would say a snap election in Bahamas is logical. Basically, the whole idea of a natural disaster. Mm-hmm. Bahamas has recently suffered two of them. And the idea is that normally when you have a natural disaster, electoral activity as close as possible to a natural disaster usually results in the incumbent remaining in office. So an incumbent will normally try to rush an election whenever they have the option to do so. And that's the reality that we've seen across the Caribbean. So the Bahamas situation is entirely unsurprising. We've had elections in Trinidad, we have elections in Jamaica, St. Kitts and Nevis, St. Lucia, St. Vincent and the Grenadines. And in all instances, they were held ahead of schedule and essentially called very quickly, given the minimum possible time to get to the polls, because the incumbent wants to benefit from whatever goodwill can be had in relation to COVID. The challenge that you have in the Bahamas, however, is that I think that this administration has been late in terms of getting on the election train. And what we found was that the early elections, the Trinidad, Jamaica, St. Vincent, et cetera, those ones that were held early in the pandemic, resulted in electoral rewards for the incumbent. The sad reality is that the more recent ones, however, which would have been St. Lucia, would have been the most recent. And before St. Lucia, we had Turks and Caicos and Curacao. The incumbents got slaughtered. And I think that the sad reality in Bahamas now is that maybe the incumbent may have waited a bit too late to actually call the election to benefit from that normal buzz you get in the wake of a natural disaster.
Absolutely. Wow. Okay. So while we're talking pandemic, how has this government performed during the pandemic compared to other countries in the region?
Yeah. It's difficult to make a comparison in terms of performance. I would say that regionally, the best case country would be Cayman Islands. Cayman Islands is a country in the Caribbean that has had the best performance in terms of cases, deaths. It also has the smallest population, or one of the smaller populations. It's a very wealthy country, somewhat like Bahamas is, and is in a position to essentially procure vaccines early because of its colonial relationship with the United Kingdom. Bahamas has a close relationship with the United States of America and might have been in a position to also procure vaccines. But Cayman Islands appears to be the best performer as compared to the others. I really don't know that. The situation in Bahamas is not great. I mean, there's no question, and I think it's generally agreed that there has been a comparatively large amount of suffering. But the other problem that you have in the Bahamas is that you're so heavily tourism dependent. It's difficult to essentially wager the economic buoyancy and success compared to the importation of the COVID disease. And I listened to the conversation that you were having with the representative from the PLP in the last section. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was essentially criticizing the rush to reopen the economy to get tourism going again. But that's the reality of what governments try to do. You want to get the economy reopened so that people can start working and money can start flowing and you can get the economy functioning. So you're rushing to do that, but on your borders, you make yourself more vulnerable to the importation of COVID. And Bahamas has, you know, it's a relatively porous country in terms of borders. And you know, this is a challenge that you will get primarily from the United States. So it's not been easy, and I would agree that certainly the numbers in the Bahamas have not been great. But I also think that your situation is peculiar, somewhat like many other countries in the Caribbean that are tourism dependent. You need to get those borders open so you can get tourism going. But whenever you do that, there's a chance that you will import. And it's a difficult game to play and a balancing act to perform.
Yeah, absolutely. Picking up on something you said, can we make an assessment at this time whether countries that have have returned to tourism quickly are experiencing spikes or issues managing COVID on the ground, or is it countries with poor border control, whether controls in your formal border processing or poor border controls in the sense of high movements of undocumented migrants?
Because that's an excellent question, Erin, and I think that another challenge that Bahamas presents, you know, you are a string of islands that are extremely porous, and that's one of the reasons why you have problems with illegal immigration into the country, illegal migration. In a situation like that, it's difficult to say, you know, you've managed borders poorly, because the reality is that the borders are difficult to manage. St. Kitts and Nevis presents itself. They had no COVID cases, no deaths. until such time as they reopened their borders. And as soon as they reopened their borders, they had a spike, and now they're having the same challenges that everyone else is having. The challenge is that for St. Kitts and Nevis is considerably easier to manage borders than it is in a place like the Bahamas. And that's the challenge that you face. So while I would agree with you that the management of borders in a situation where you have illegal migration, Trinidad and Tobago had similar problems where they had the porous border with Venezuela and persons essentially importing. Their borders were closed for a year, but yet still they had imported cases of COVID coming in left, right, and center because you share a sea access with Venezuela that, you know, migrants were coming, they were bringing COVID, and the situation just kept multiplying itself. So it's a difficult issue to address. But I also think that in the case of the Bahamas, the economic concerns, especially with an election looming, the economic concerns of getting those borders open again so that you can get economic activity, in many cases is paramount, because it's one thing to talk about infection levels, but it's another thing to talk about the level of human suffering that comes from people who work in the tourism sector being out of work. You know, the hotel workers, persons who are in entertainment for tourists, all of those people not working, and then you have to deal with their economic issues in addition to the fact that you have infections in hospitals and people that need to be treated.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I've got a ton of questions here, and hopefully I can get you back in for a follow-up. So I'm going to move on to something slightly different. We have an unprecedented number of new parties and what we call third parties, right, running in this election cycle, including a very new party that was only formed a few days ago called the United Coalition Party, right? And a couple of these groupings, in fact, one of them is called the Coalition of Independence. And I'm still not quite sure if it's a party or if it's a group of independents, right? And so I wanted to ask, how do coalition parties operate and function in the rest of the region?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the answer to that is simple, not very well. We don't really have a history of, coalition or independent parties in the Caribbean, and I think in Bahamas, no less. You have had a history of government by either the FNM
yes,
or the PLP. And that's your reality over time. What has been happening in the Bahamas is what has been happening in several other countries, where people have grown tired of the alternation between the two and the belief that they're essentially one and the same thing. So the idea is that you come up with these new options. And the reality is that in almost every single situation that they haven't done well. This new coalition that you spoke about is interesting. It comes on the heels of the success of not even a coalition, but in a loose association of independents in Cayman Islands, where you had independent candidates that were running, and they coalesced post-election under the leadership of one individual, and they are now in the government in the Cayman Islands. Frankly, as a political strategist and analyst, I would think that type of thing is highly ill-advised, because normally it will rely on coalescence behind a single individual or person that has a personality that can pull it all together. Mm-hmm. But they're usually very short-lived. If they make it to the end of the first term, that's good. But beyond that, it's difficult to function, because we like the convenience and the comfort of political party systems. And I think that when it comes down to it, the Bahamas will go back to being a two-party system at some point in time when things settle down. But it doesn't mean that people are not asking questions and, you know, options entered. In Barbados recently, we had an election in which an option was presented. We had several political parties, there were five of them, that ran in addition to the traditional two. And, you know, ultimately what happens is that most of these parties make it more difficult for the legitimate opposition force to be able to take over. Now, I don't know in the case of, because I haven't done any polling in the Bahamas, I don't know which of the two parties, the FNM or the PLP, carries more support. But what would normally happen where you have a coalition situation is that the single party that has the largest block of support So if they can hold on to that, then the opposing forces will share the fragmented support, and ultimately they will do a whole lot worse. In the case of Barbados, the alternative, the opposition, had the majority of support. So it was a clean sweep for them. In the case of the Bahamas, I'm not sure who has the majority support, but whoever does, essentially these alternative parties, these third parties that you call them, will make will suffer, and will force, essentially, they will help the predominant force into office in a major way. That's the theory of how it works. Mm-hmm. We have had a few interesting exceptions, and St. Kitts and Nevis is one of them, where you had a coalition of known political parties that came together, and they have done very well. But generally speaking, that's one of the few examples that I can identify where you have a coalition that comes together and says, okay, well, let's be able to take over. Invariably, these coalitions are fragmented. There may be one or two personalities. I mean, we chatted about the current situation, and the former speaker presents himself within the UCM as a personality that is known to Bahamians. So maybe there may be some interest there. The problem is that it's difficult to build a political party around the popularity of one individual. And in a situation where you're dealing with, so many constituencies and so many people. The critical thing about Cayman Islands, though, sorry I'm talking so much, is that Cayman is tiny. It's a small country where you have constituencies like around 500 or 600 people. And in those kind of numbers, independent politics works. When you're dealing with a country the size of Bahamas, it's difficult to get independent politics working. So I tend to think that the idea of success of independence or success of unknown coalition entities will be difficult to achieve.
Absolutely. Now, you used a phrase there. You said legitimate opposition force, right? And the sort of anti-imperialist advocate in me jumped up when you said that. I said, man, you ain't even giving the people a try. You ain't even giving them a chance. But what does it mean to be a legitimate opposition force?
Well, that's probably a poor choice of words, because a legitimate opposition force can be a government. But it would be, when I say opposition in the sense that it is not the alternative, you know, the alternative that people are calling for. And legitimacy is not a judgment that I am making, a value judgment on whether the message is legitimate or not. Certainly the message might be legitimate, but it is whether or not you can get so many people to identify with it.
Right.
So if you look at, for example, the Green Agenda, and the Green Agenda has presented itself in several other Caribbean islands. And I think that we all agree that the Green Agenda is not only legitimate, but it's fantastic. And that's the kind of voice that we want. But Green parties haven't done lobbying. I don't believe you have a Green party in Bahamas. But generally, Green parties don't do well. And I can't think of anything more legitimate than their own voice. The challenge is that it's hard for them to get people to coalesce around their view, because while people may think, yeah, the message is nice, they may also say, but you can't win to deliver. And we understand that unless you can deliver governance, it's difficult to deliver all of what is being spoken about. So when we hear the conversation just now about the idea of a free testing policy, the first question you ask is, how is he going to pay for it? Mm-hmm. Part of the response is that you believe that this entity is in a position to find the necessary resources to pay for plans and programs that they put in place. The reality is one could say that legitimacy or a lack of legitimacy appears to be in situations where people believe, the talk is good, but we really don't believe that you can get it done, because we don't think you're going to have a majority of people in parliament that would be able to drive that agenda.
Yes, I understand. Absolutely. Mm. So I've got text here, a couple of texts here for you. And the text says, how does an idea that you mentioned work? Exactly how does an incumbent benefit from a natural disaster? What is the science or psychology behind expecting to capitalize from early elections after natural disasters? Now, let me know if that's very heavy and it's something that we would need more time for.
It is an excellent question, and it's an easy one to answer. You just had a hurricane in the Bahamas. And I can tell you my experience, because I worked in Dominica post-hurricane. immediately after a hurricane, people need food, they need water, they need shelter. They need simple things. If you are in a position to give them those things, people will appreciate it. They will appreciate it a whole lot. And I found that in Dominica, you know, certainly immediately after the hurricane, you know, the food and water was being distributed. And essentially people who were opposition supporters were happy because the government was out there distributing those things. Mm-hmm. So it's easy to make people happy. And we, when a man is hungry and thirsty and you give him water, he will love you, honestly. And that's the reality. The challenge is that that love does not last for very long, because immediately after he thinks about the essentials, which is food and water and shelter. And then a year later, you say to him, you're still without, he's still living under tarpaulin. He's still without electricity and so on. Then you start to think, but look, you know, isn't it time that I got those things? Yep. So the psychology is simple. It says food and water and so on and shelter, they're easy things to provide. They're cheap. A government can do that quite quickly. So you give people those things, and then you rush to the polls because you know that they will love you in the short term. And if you translate that to COVID, it's similar, because COVID is essentially a natural disaster. And with COVID, what you do is when people are out of work, you give them a subsidy and you give them a little money to help to feed the family and provide. In some instances, you distribute food for people who are not working. Mm-hmm. You bargain with the banks to give people eases on making payments and whatnot. But it's important to do all of that in the short term. If in the case of Bahamas, you have waited an entire year, you know how people who have worked in hotels who have not been working for the entire year, people who have been driving taxis and so on, or water taxis that haven't been working for the whole year, and they're saying, but you know, the short-term benefits, I've not seen them. And now you're saying to me, you want me to vote for you then. And that's the reason why I think that the election is a bit late, because that's the pertinent concern. No, the pertinent concern is you haven't dealt with my long-term issues. So the logic is short-term issues are easy to deal with. So your political benefits will come from satisfying those in the short term.
Absolutely. Peter, I've got a call on the line. Let's see if we can get the call, and then I got one last question for you. Caller, you're on the clock.
Okay. Yes, hi. How you doing?
Good day.
See Alan Johnson, yeah. Just first, just a quick note, because he did answer the question concerning the impact of disaster for me. Mm-hmm. But just for a quick note on the correction, which your previous guests, mm-hmm. Tonight, they have, after the COVID address at 8 p.m., they're going to have rebroadcast of their candidates' launch. They're going to have the COVID address at 8 p.m. Okay. On the television stations and the internet. But the actual economics thing is tomorrow at 8 p.m. Uh-huh. But the information of the COVID plan, the blueprint, as well as the financial plan is available at plpbahamas.org right now.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much, C. Allen Johnson. Awesome. Okay. I see one more caller. Quickly, caller, you're on the clock.
Good morning, Aaron Green, and your guest.
Good morning.
So this is for your previous guest. Now, if our government is serious, when Minnis begged the governor for Florida for a liquid oxygen, mm-hmm. he should have got some. It's called Regeneron, monoclonal antibody. If you Google Regeneron Florida, Florida's going there for free. Once you're on 666, you are 85%, you will get better. The monoclonal antibody attacks it.
Thank you very much.
Wait, PLP needs to put that in the platform. They will buy Regeneron for not so sick, and Remdesivir for the sick. We need a health summit.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
All right.
Thank you. Absolutely. Peter, that was for the earlier guest. So as we close out mm-hmm. the show, I think I have a very important question for you. How did Barbados produce Amia Motley? Right? I mean, you know, the subtext is, how do we prepare politicians? How do we prepare people to become good mm-hmm. governors, good leaders, good stewards of governance, and good politicians? How did you all produce Amia Motley? And what opportunities exist at a tertiary level for people in the region who want to participate in politics at that level?
Mm. Well, that's a big one, and you've asked me before the end of the program. But let
don't
me just
say macaroni
that.
Pie now. Don't say macaroni
no,
pie.
Not macaroni pie, or dashin or something like that. Mm-hmm. No, I mean, I've studied her rise. She has become the rock star of Barbadian politics and Caribbean politics to some extent. She has all the energy that people like. But look, you know, one of the things that she benefited from was an early exposure to office. She went into politics. She lost the first election. When she won the second one, the government came in with a substantial majority, and her leader at the time gave her the Ministry of Education, which was essentially one third of the national budget. My sense is that he invested heavily in three women at that point in time, and two of them were very young. And one of them has essentially become Mia Motley. And I would say that if there was a simple answer to the question, it would be you need to identify winners, you need to pick winners, you need to invest heavily in persons that are young, women especially, that have been extremely badly treated in our political system across the Caribbean. And the reality is that you will reap rewards. And as I said, he invested in three women. One of them is Prime Minister Motley. The other one is former minister. But the significant thing is the investment in youth and the investment in women. And I would recommend highly that any political organization in the region, you know, seeks to look for young people, expose them to office. And then when you give them the opportunity to perform, you know, step back and watch them grow.
Absolutely. Wow. Thank you very much. I had another question here, and it was really, do political and personal scandals end political careers in the modern Caribbean or ever? I don't know if they, I think like our politicians drink Campari, that's like their super tonic to protect them from these things that should, oh my.
But I'm not being uncharitable when I say this, but I mean, I think that the Bahamas is in a position to lecture the rest of us on political scandals. You know, Bahamas has had their fair share of political scandals. And I mean, it's not as though Barbados has been immune. We've had them across the region. But the reality is that political scandal has borne and grown in the Caribbean, and Bahamas has done fairly well in that regard, too.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a slap to Bahamian politics. It is what it is. And my sense is that people in the Caribbean have a very short memory where scandal is concerned and essentially have a very high tolerance level for scandal. The presumption that people are outraged and offended by people giving contracts to their friends and that type of thing is something that, as a political consultant, I always tell my clients to walk very cautiously where that is concerned, because it will not win an election.
Absolutely.
Across the region, there have been very few instances in which you have presented something as scandalous enough that people can say, okay, I'm going to vote against this and I'm going to put the person out to office. And in the case of Bahamas, I mean, you know of situations where persons have been heavily plagued by scandal. They go into opposition and they are alternative, you know, within a few years, they are washing the blood of the lamb. So I wouldn't lose too much sleep over scandal. My thing is scandals come and go, but I think that the average Caribbean person has a very high tolerance for scandal in government, which is not to say that it is right.
Mm-hmm.
It's not saying it is right. It is just the reality that, you know, we are more concerned about selfishness than we are concerned about stealing.
Absolutely.
I don't know if that makes sense.
I think so.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say, you know, a few years ago, I ate about 350 mango one time off one tree, and I figured that scandal would kill me. I could never get into politics, but I'm glad there's a space for me there. Thank you so much.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Very good chatting with you.
Absolutely, and I hope to have you back on soon. I'd love to continue this relationship of political dialogue across the waters. Thank you so much, Mr. Wickham.
Well, okay, thanks. My pleasure.
Take absolutely. Care. And to all the texters, I'm sorry I couldn't get through to all of your texts today as the segment switched. Thank you for joining the conversation. I'm going to read some of these off tomorrow. I'm out of the studio. It's time for Levon Miller and Unleashed at the 11 o'clock hour. So stay tuned to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM and have a wonderful one day, Bahamas.